guys. Welcome to Overcrest. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jake.
Why are you laughing already? You were already starting to giggle. What are you giggling about?
I'm happy to be here, Chris. I'm happy to be here. I'm also realizing that your glasses change every single week. That's okay. Kind of what I was laughing to myself about.
I've gone through an insane ocular adventure.
Oh.
I bought these Oliver Peoples glasses, which are, they're not here, because they're the glasses that Patrick Bateman, pull up a picture of Patrick Bateman's glasses. Pull it up on screen share. I love that movie, and I love 80s stuff, and I'm like, what glasses does Patrick Bateman wear? Turns out he wears Oliver Peoples glasses in the movie. And this all came out when I was making a reel that was all about the business cards or whatever with the eggshell business cards. Yeah, that's the glasses you normally see me wearing, correct?
Yes. I didn't realize that, but yes. Yeah, okay.
Those are the glasses I'm usually wearing. And they're expensive. I bought so I ordered them last spring, and the whole process has been an absolute nightmare. I order them. I want glass lenses. I'm tough on glasses. Yes. If you look at any of my glasses, they're always scratched up. They're always fucked up.
Are glasses now generally just poly?
They're polycarbonate.
It's like a plastic.
Because it's a scam. They're cheaper to make. They're cheaper to make. And they're lighter. So this is a little more comfortable. But they're not as good as glass.
Yeah, that seems good.
They just aren't. Glass is a... Nobody goes to the Louvre and looks at the Mona Lisa, and it's covered in it's covered in polycarbonate. It's probably
glass. Probably is actually.
Actually, it probably is the bulletproof
glass. It is because it's probably bulletproof.
Let me. That's a terrible example. Just delete that. Pretend I never said that. Nobody buys art for their house. And gets
Hold on, camera. I think you need to use the camera lens analogy.
Yes,
use
the plastic lens in like a Kodak Polaroid or something. It's just not as good. It doesn't have the.
You're welcome.
Light doesn't travel through it as well. Plus, like if you hang art in your house, you don't buy the plastic polycarbonate cover for it. You get the glass, which has like the archival quality. It blocks UV light, blah, blah, blah. There's all kinds of different things to do.
I need to get that.
For photos.
I don't have
anyway,
that.
Anyway, so I want glass. I've destroyed. I bought these Oliver Peoples glasses at the place here in town. Got the nice lenses. I got bifocals now because I'm a nerd. I can't see. Which, by the way, I noticed that now that I had these other glasses that don't have the bifocal in them. I'm like an old man. I'm holding my phone out like this so I can even see what is on my phone. It's terrible, dude. It's absolutely terrible. Anyway, so the glasses are getting all scratched up because they're polycarbonate. I go back to the glasses place. I said, hey, these glasses are all screwed up. They're like, well, you need to stop cleaning them with sandpaper or whatever that is that they said. So I don't do that. I use a nice microfiber cloth. It's from Griot's Garage. They make the best of the best. Uh-huh. Lo and behold, Spectacle Shop doesn't know who Griot's Garage is. So they don't know how
probably
high quality product is. So they're like, you need to stop doing that. So they gave me another set of lenses. Right, so they give me another set of lenses, throw them in the glasses. I can see again. Life is good. It's not refracting. I don't have headaches at night, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Literally 2 months later, I can't see out of the glasses. I go back. I said, hey, guys, your lenses are terrible. They said, it's your fault. $100. You can have another set. Great. So I get another set of lenses. Perfect. Okay. 3 months go by. I'm taking care of these lenses. I'm taking care of them. I'm trying to like wash them in water. They're starting to scratch already. I'm upset. What do I got to do? So I go on OliverPeoples.com. And this it's been really frustrating. Never order anything from any company owned by Sunglasses Hut. That is my, they own all kinds of glasses things.
Okay.
Don't order anything.
Got it.
Don't do it. Anyway, so I go on there. I order the Oliver Peoples frames straight from Oliver Peoples because you can get Italian glass, which is supposed to be like this amazing glass. It comes. These glasses come, and I put them
on. Well, I do know that it's Italian glass. So in Venice, I've been to Venice, and Venice is known for glass blowing. Like that's where glass blowing all started and all like the really high end like glass blown things, art pieces.
So I get the glasses in the mail. Takes 3 months to get the glass lenses. I'm super happy.
High end.
I put them on
glass.
I can't see out of my left eye. They completely messed up like the ocular rotation of the left eye. So I'm like, okay, I can't see. They said,
no
problem.
Astigmatism?
Send them back. Yeah, I do. Send them back.
So that's probably
all right. So I send them back, and now I'm back to wearing the sandpaper glasses again. I send them back to Oliver Peoples. 3 months later, I get the glasses. All right. So I'm They're great. I can see it's amazing, Jake. I cannot impress upon you enough how amazing these glasses are. The glass is so good. So okay. Day one, I'm in the garage. Put my welding helmet on. Welding, yes. welding. A piece of welding glass goes over the helmet, drips down, and lands on the glass, melting a hole on the glass lens. So I call up all our peoples. They said, you know what? We'll take care of it. It's no problem. They, we got you. We'll send you new ones, but you got to send the old ones back. And I said, can't you just send me the new ones yeah. and then I'll send you these yeah. back? Because they're like, no. I said, how would I pay for the new ones and then you give me a refund when I send the new ones? No, we can't do that. Can you just send me the lens, one lens? No, they will not do anything. They won't do anything. So I send the glasses back. And I wait like, I don't know, 2 months. And I sent them an email. I said, hey, just checking on the status of this order. They go, what order? And I'm like, you know, at this point, I've been through glasses. I'm over it. I'm done. And in the meantime, I had ordered these, which are Zenni optical glasses. And they're awful. They make me look not like me. I don't like these glasses. The vision is very narrow. I can't see very well. It's a huge problem. So now I'm in glasses no man land right now. I'm in glasses no man's land. I don't know what to do. It's my thought is,
you know what you could have done with all of this time and money is just gotten LASIK. And I know I like glasses. I'll be the first person to say you look better in glasses. You do.
Yeah, here, I'll take them off.
You look very strained. You have beady little eyes, angry beady eyes. Yes. You're very welcome.
It's only because you're looking up at me.
Yes. Well, so far away your height that they look smaller than they are.
Yes.
No, but I think you should just then wear fashion glasses with getting LASIK, because then you can fix your astigmatism. You can fix all the other crap. If you are without glasses, then you can still see.
Jake, we've been doing this podcast for 6 years. Do I seem like someone that would do fashion glasses, that I would wear fake fill in the blank?
No, but you should.
No, I will not do that. I must wear glasses. And my thought is I want...
You can call them safety glasses. You're just perpetually safe.
I'm not safe from being a poser. I'll tell you that right now. I'm not doing that. So when I was growing up, my grandpa had glasses. And I actually have a pair of his glasses that are inside that I was going to get lenses, put them, and then I broke them, which is super, super bummer. Anyway, I was growing up, and he was constantly getting new glasses. And I remember being like, every time he would get new glasses as a kid, I was always like, whoa, who are you? It was almost like shaving your beard. Like, it just changes your look so much when you wear glasses. So my thought was, this whole process is getting the Oliver Peoples glasses, and I will wear... It's a legacy brand. It's a legacy frame. I will wear this frame for the rest of my life, and I will always look like me. People won't have to go, oh, so you got new glasses, or oh, they kind of look at you funny. And I just want, and here I am wearing different glasses every podcast episode.
Every single week.
I had to
call you out, and there went the entire episode.
Yeah, sorry. It is what it is. Anyway, Jake, this is a question from Andrew Ritter. Who had a question for us.
Okay, I like it.
If you could pick just one.
What is this episode, Chris? What are we doing here?
Who cares? People just hang out. Hang out. It's all stuff. It's a hangout episode. Just chill. If you could pick just one single year of production cars for the rest of your life.
Yes.
What would it be?
2004.
I had a lot of trouble with this. Did you say 2000 something?
2004.
2004. You would only be able to own cars from 2004.
Perfect.
Well, guys, it's been nice talking on the podcast.
Hit episode 475.
That's going to be it. We're all done. If anybody wants to replace Jake as host, send me an email, Chris,
right in.
At overchrisproductions.com with your CV, resume, and what your single year production car would be. And it better be before 1994. I will tell you that. Write anything after 1994, I'm going to train AI to shred your CV.
I had to look up when CAN bus was mandated, because I was like, ooh, pre-canvas would be nice, actually, because then you can actually work on cars and trace wiring, even though it is a pain in the ass. Canvas is good because it eliminates a lot of wiring. But if
apparently
you're actually going to work
seen
and
the,
maintain on
the
stuff.
The Grand Tour episode, the new one, where he's got an Aston Martin with canvas.
Oh, I know. It's so
constantly.
Amazing. Yes.
And it can't be diagnosed in any way. You can't. Did you see? There is one of those for sale. We have a car for sale of the week coming up, but
yes.
There is an Aston Martin Vantage for sale for $15,000 locally. It has a rod knock, and the price keeps dropping.
That.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I do have an LS in my garage, Chris.
If you can get that to integrate with the CAN bus, I'll be amazed. Okay, so why 2004? And
I mean, 2004.
Are you saying anything after CAN? 2004 is kind of a CAN bus situation. 2005.
No, it's CAN bus is earlier. Actually, it was 96. I want to say is when it started going and everything.
So
2008
what are you
is
about?
When it was officially mandated. Well, okay.
What do you mean
if
mandated?
You only,
it was mandated.
I'm pretty sure CAN bus is like a mandated now standard.
Okay.
Because it's OBD2 and CAN bus were like one in the same. They go with each other. And CAN
is it a standard
OBD2
or is it like
is mandated?
CAN
bus
is
a standard.
Okay.
CAN bus is a standard, or a technology, I should say.
The OBD2 standard.
Yes.
Okay. It's been standard mandatory in all cars, blah, blah. That's 1995, 96. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. Yes.
2004.
Anyways,
no, you're wrong.
What I was going to say, if I can only drive these cars, you're going to want something somewhat modern, I think, for a daily driver. Like,
why?
How often are you really driving an old fun car? I don't. Okay. Here's the thing. 2004 was the time when cars, we had excess. Things were great in 2004. It was before the market crash. You had this was the year of Hummers, superchargers on everything. The SRT10, like, sure, let's put a Viper motor in a truck. The E55 AMG came out. The SVT Cobra came out. They had, like, sleepers everywhere. The supercharged MR2 came out, a factory turbo Miata. Stuff was big, powerful, robust. I've had more cars from the year 2004 than any other year, which somehow, actually that's not true. I've had two 1970 cars as well. Anyways, I was in high school in 2004. I'm pretty sure 2004 is when I got my driver's license.
I thought you were going to say when I lost my virginity.
No, 2000. I this is right where I got my driver's license too. So I think it's like etched in my brain, right?
Okay.
So
how old are you again?
That's how old am I? 37.
Okay, so you're not that much younger than me.
No,
I'm just. How did I not?
I understand.
That?
I understand. Here's the thing. I want to say, 1970. Make it all analog. Make it all easy to work on. It's all vintage. It's cool. But the realist in me knows that, like, nope, I don't want anything too modern where it's hard to work on. But I also realize I'm not going to want to drive a 1970 something the rest of my life. So 2004. It is the real answer. It's
the
real
answer. I had a lot of trouble with this. I had a lot of trouble
with this. My F-250 is a 2004. I can keep going.
There's a lot of great cars in the 1998 to 2004 period of time.
Agreed.
Is extremely good for motoring. It really, truly is. It's very, very good. It is the last, and we're going to talk about this a little later if we get to it in news and stop talking about glasses and decades. I couldn't figure this out, Jake. I couldn't
what?
Nail this down.
You don't have an answer.
I don't have an answer. My instinct too, and here's the reason why I can't do what you're doing and how I wish I, but I'm kind of forced into it with the 2004.
Yeah.
If I didn't live in Minnesota, it would be a lot different
because It'd be easier.
We cannot drive something from the 70s every day. We can't.
It will disintegrate.
We've been through this before. They don't last. It is insane how fast things start to rust. I had my 911 I had a hydraulic tensioners put in it, and a long time ago. This is like 8-9 years, just forever ago. And I drove it in the spring, and there was a little bit of just salt powder left on the road. Okay, so this is just ages ago. It's been painted since, new motor since, whatever. And it got to the shop. And it sat outside a little bit before it got worked on. And I remember the guy telling me, hey, can you come change the oil before I do this? You can use the tools, do it in the backyard, whatever. So, yeah, sure, no problem. I go over there. all the bolts on the case had rust. They all had rust. I was like, are you serious? From one trip down there, you just can't, cannot do it. So I feel like this is a very, and Andrew is from California. And so it's a very California question. So I'm going to, I'm going to go from the perspective of California.
Honestly, if okay, hold on. Can I also, I just came up with something and I'm sorry. I'm interjecting.
No, go ahead.
If I live in California, 1964, all day long, first year of the Mustang, first year of the 911, 60s, everything was cool. It wasn't 50s bulbous and
too
like
slow. Too slow.
Too slow. Not enough swap weird options. Styling.
Everything's too slow though. Then. Technology hadn't advanced far enough to give you enough diversity for modification. You were really? Only, which I think is, I mean, it's interesting
was
depending
the first
on what you,
year. No, it wasn't the first year of the V8 Corvette. That was 54. But
if you get into the late 80s, you have the opportunity to swap and do way more things. You can put small blocks in things. You can do.
I thought we're talking about a factory car. Which year? Which, like, if we're talking swaps, that's silly. So now you're saying, oh, well, I can only swap it from that year, but that also counts? You're just being ridiculous now, Chris.
Yeah. It is kind of a ridiculous question.
Year of production cars.
Oh, man. I'm just thinking about Porsche a little bit here. I'm going to go with like 88, 89. Can I choose like 88 and a half? Because then you could have like a 930, but you could also have a Carrera 4 and you could daily that. And you could I could drive I love my Trooper. You know, I think the Troopers are really like that kind of like period once OBD. I don't like. My goal is one of my friends has a screen name that he uses for everything called his name's Jason. He's the one that does all the scouting with me.
Yep.
His name on the forums is always pre-93 only, aka
that was OBD.
That was when OBD-1 came out. It was 1993. And I kind of feel that a little bit. Like I'm like a pre-OBD. Anyway, I can't answer this question. There's too many things that I need.
I thought of all this. I did a lot of research, Chris.
Yeah, I thought of it OBD, in more of like an enigmatic sense. I can't
choose. 2004. There you go.
I can't choose. I just can't do it. All right. Tell me a little bit about
good job, Chris. No, here, let me, you know what? I'm just going to take it away from you. You know, we have a new sponsor here on the show, which I'm very excited to introduce. What?
I just want to take a second to thank all of our partners.
Absolutely.
Thank you to all of you. I hope everyone that listens to the podcast knows who they are. I hope when you need something that's relevant to what they sell, that you would go to them first. Because if they're supporting this podcast, they're supporting you and what you like. If you're here listening, you like this, they're supporting that. It's important. Anyway, go ahead.
There's something else that I'll just take that one point further. Yeah. We could probably make more money, and I just got off a call with a certain podcast business partner, if we had just done the general Casper mattress, whatever else ads that you're on every other single show. It would also, for the record, be a heck of a lot easier.
It would be.
But we do not want to do that. We only accept partners and sponsors that are relevant to our listeners.
It has to be relevant.
That we believe in and that we actually, I don't know, like, and we would purchase these products
I was listening to a podcast the other day, and this is, you know, everybody knows what my politics are, so I can say this. It was like a libertarian based podcast. I'm a fairly libertarian guy, and at the and this guy is like, at the beginning of the podcast, it's an ad for like Pfizer, but the guy is like so anti drug and anti this and all this stuff, like,
and you're like, wait a minute,
what is this ad? How does this work? I don't want to do that to you guys. I'm not going to do that to you guys.
No,
we are not.
I want to just reiterate, like, that you won't hear the like canned whatever ads that just you'll see on every other show. Like, we definitely put in extra work behind the scene to do this. So,
with
that being said, our latest partner is AC Solutions. They offer complete plug-and-play air conditioning conversion kits for your classic BMW, such as the E30, E28, and E24, and soon-to-be Porsche, to get you staying cool all summer long. They feature OEM quality components with period-correct finishes and materials, and their products are designed as a drop-in upgrade to your old factory AC systems, resulting in a more efficient, quieter, and more robust package. Products stem from hands-on design and development, deep knowledge and passion for vehicles designed by our friend and enthusiast with well-documented user guides that all follow factory service manual techniques. All the products come with a complete and comprehensive warranty, well-designed and distributed right in Northern California, with some right around the corner. Check them out with all their hundreds of satisfied enthusiasts, and don't let a hot day stop you from enjoying a nice drive. Check them out at acsolutions.co. That's acsolutions.co, Chris.
You can find him on social, too. And many thanks to Austin for coming on board as a partner with us. He's a cool guy.
Yes, we also...
supports the rally, comes on the rally. I mean, this company
speaking
is great.
Speaking of cool, yeah. we may have him on the show for something cool coming up soon.
All right, I'm looking forward to that. Okay, so one thing I'd like to start doing again, we used to do this all the time, is a car for sale of the week, Jake.
Yes.
For sale of the week. We're never going to get to news. I wrote up so
much
news.
This is more fun.
So
I don't
work.
Care about news.
Yeah,
who cares?
Okay. So this is the car for sale of the week right here.
Are
this
you going to share it?
Did it share? It should have shared. Yeah, there it is.
I can't see it, but okay.
Well, 1984 Jaguar 280i. Wait a second.
That's not it, though. That's
not
actually
it.
Not a Jaguar. Nope.
It's
turns
not.
Out.
It is actually a TVR. Which Facebook does not list.
Makes
we have
sense.
Decided to sell our 1984 TVR 280i Coupe with just over 650 confirmed miles.
Yes.
650 confirmed miles. It is ready to be loved and driven like we have. Wait a second. What do you mean driven like we have? You've driven it 650 miles. What do you mean? They may have loved it, but they didn't drive it.
Yeah.
It has been my personal favorite of our collection. It has an extremely rare option of the hardtop, which is quite cool, I think. This is a one-of-a-one combination of the orange interior, terrible-looking Oz racing wheels, and hardtops in the country. It is one of seven ever to be brought over with a hardtop from Europe. I hate when people do this stuff. It's like a Mopar guy thing. Yeah,
because it's got this particular trim with this spec with this, and it was built on Wednesday. It's really dumb. I agree.
Power is provided by a 2.8-liter Ford V6 that is said... maybe, to have been modified by Ford special vehicle operations under previous ownership. I mean, that would be something that you would want to have documentation for, I think. Blah, blah, blah. It's got some seats. TVR released the blah, blah, blah. The Tasman in 1980 with a wedge-shaped design. What do you think of this thing, Jake? How do you think it looks?
I like it. I like that it's unique. I like British cars that are weird things. But here's the thing, Chris. I dug deep on this.
Okay.
Chris, this car has a story. This particular car...
look at these
was
wheels,
listed.
They're so these, bad.
Well, let me tell you, this particular car, those are not factory wheels, obviously. This particular car,
by the way,
was
let me get
listed.
The price. Let me get the price.
Oh, yeah,
first.
Go ahead.
$14,600 or best offer. What would you pay for this thing? Oh, dude, look at the interior. Can you see this or you're not able to see?
I'm not able to see it, but I'm looking at it on my screen too.
Okay. Look at this interior. Yes. It's great.
Oh,
although
I love the interior.
It does absolutely look like a leather wrapped boom box for the stereo there. This thing is phenomenal. I love the way... look at the headliner. The headliner is like... I don't know what that's piped or something. What would you even call that?
It's amazing. Yeah.
It's fantastic. I imagine that you would break down almost immediately. This thing's got 650 miles on it. It's going to break down immediately.
Well,
although,
I will say, if
anybody buys this, guaranteed approved on the Overcrest Rally in the fall.
Oh, 100%. Yes. Yeah. All right. Do you want to know this specific model, Chris? I did some digging.
Yeah, I'm curious about it because it's really a good looking car.
Yes. Well, here's this actual car, the one in St. Paul that you're looking at. This exact car was on Cars and Bids earlier this year and did not meet reserve at $9,000. Okay.
Okay.
And the modifications, including supposedly that Ford SVO high compression kit and the stupid 15-inch OZ Racing wheels,
horrible,
were all done because it was a victim. Where did I read this? It was a victim of theft. They stole the wheels, did some other stuff. So it's like it does not have a good story to it.
Here are the cons. All it says here, cons, Sagi glove box.
That's it.
That's all you get. But we
Sagi
know
glove
true.
Box. No.
Motivated to sell. Trades might be entertained. I wonder if you would trade for my Trooper. Or I'm sorry, my 4Runner.
No. Hold on. Here we go. The story behind this car is even sketchier. Allegedly, it was a showroom car for DVR importer and only had 41 miles on it as of 2011. It was then sold to a second owner who ended up abandoning it at a mechanic he took it to. It sat there until the current owner bought it in 22. And then it sat, so it sat outside in the Arizona sun for a decade. And then at some point, thieves stole the wheels, radio, shift knob, and others. The windshield was broken, but apparently it's been restored, quote unquote. But the question is, mechanically, has anything gone through? Like, can you imagine how dried out these seals are everywhere?
Awful. It's going to break down. Break down. Yeah. Absolutely. So, immediately.
TVR, here's what's interesting, too, that I think would be at least somewhat interesting for you specifically, Chris. So TVR, of course, is kind of like a
what's that bespoke, stand for?
It is, I believe, the name of the dude. TVR is...
I got it. Let me keep going. Do your thing.
Name of the company's owner, Trevor Wilkinson.
Trevor Wilkinson. Are you sure it's not Trevor Wilkinson?
For Wilkinson's son. Trevor Wilkinson. Where's the R? That's T.
Oh, that's what I'm wondering.
W. That's weird. Okay. Anyways, they do, you know, like basically bespoke one-off, not one-off, but like they're almost kit cars, I have to say. And they've been around since the 60s, and they generally use drivetrain components, everything else from other cars. This particular vehicle, the 280 Coupe, was a lot of Ford components, as evidenced by the Ford V6. But here's what's really sad. You know how slow your Pinto was, Chris?
Yeah.
They also made this car with that Pinto motor.
Come on, really?
Yep. It was the 200, not the 280.
Oof, brutal. Well, the thing, mine was a three-speed automatic, which didn't help anybody's case. I got a little screen here I want to share with you. I'm going to try and do this, see if this shares better.
Oh, no, it came with the three-speed auto.
Oof, brutal. Can you see the screen?
No.
No, you can't see it. All right, well, we're not going to do that then. I was going to go through some of the cool TVRs that have been out there.
There are some weird ones. What was the one from that movie with Halle Berry? Swordfish? That was a weird one with John Travolta.
I have no idea. Some really good looking TVRs though. But
I like them.
We don't want to like them, Chris. Pinto engines.
No, probably not. Right.
Let's get into a I gotta show you this. I emailed on this car. I can't show you.
Oh boy. I don't know why I can't see, but
probably because we tried having you log in as me. It didn't work, apparently.
Yeah, probably not. Okay. Can I click on something? I emailed the car. Hold on. I'm looking at it. Okay.
This. Let me pop this over onto the screen for you guys.
Yep. Okay.
Of course, I closed the tab. All right.
I sent you a much better car than this.
No, you didn't. What is it?
Locally. That Mark 1 for cheap.
Yeah, that's toast. You sent me some shitty rabbit.
It didn't have any rust on it. You kidding me?
Ah, that thing looked like hell. I'm not interested.
As opposed to this.
This is different. Oh, everybody's like, what is this? I got to pull it up. All right, here we go. I feel like a noob right now. This is frustrating. Riverside is such a pain. There it is. All right. 1976 Volkswagen Scirocco in Viper green, Jake. Uh-huh. This thing is in Viper green. Amazing, amazing vehicle. Runs and drives. Has a hard start condition until the engine warms up, which just means warm up regulator, cold start injector, whatever. Aesthetically needs some love. Perfect for old VW enthusiasts as a project car. Message me if you would like to view it. $3,500 or best offer. Look at this thing, Jake. Phenomenal.
Yeah. Oh, phenomenal. The one I sent you sold already because it was also $3,500 for a Mark 1 two-door rust-free Rabbit.
If I'm going to own a Rabbit now, it's going to be a round headlight, 74 to 879, or an early Westie. I don't want a wraparound headlight Rabbit. I don't want it. Not interested.
Well, okay then. Be that way. Right.
Let's get into a little bit of news.
Tell me the news, Chris.
On March 28th, Volkswagen sparked excitement across social media with a teaser that hinted at the possible return of the iconic Harlequin. Let me show you the screen here, which you won't be able to see, but everybody else will.
I could see the other one when you shared it, so I don't know.
All right, there it is.
Oh, I'm good. Color is coming. If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. Known for their unique multicolored paint schemes, these factory-built polos and golfs are favorite among enthusiasts. They only made like 275 Harlequin golfs. With a dedicated following that meticulously tracks the whereabouts and ownership of these vibrant vehicles, the anticipation was palpable.
Yeah.
The response was overwhelmingly positive, as Volkswagen enthusiasts and former devotees, known affectionately as Dubbers, shared the news widely, reveling in the nostalgia and the that's what they're called. It's not wrong.
Okay.
What?
Dubbers.
It's true.
Hey, reveling
in the nostalgia and the prospect of seeing a beloved piece of VW's past make a comeback. And then they posted this.
I'm waiting.
When we say completely made up, that's exactly what we mean. Well, it's April 1st.
That's so lame. So not only did they just like troll everyone, they're also making fun of their history by saying like, brutal. How dumb was this? It's just brutal. A joke, you guys.
Brutal. This is my lead news story because I want to just hate on Volkswagen right now. In a surprising turn of events, Volkswagen revealed on Monday morning that the teaser was merely an April Fool's Day joke, leaving fans deflated. The announcement, intended as humor, fell flat, underscoring a misjudgment in Volkswagen's attempt to engage with its audience that it apparently has no idea who it is. They don't know who their audience is at all. They got destroyed in the comments. Good. I sent a message to Zach DePiro, who listens to the podcast and is coming on the rally. He's got a Harlequin.
Has a Harlequin.
He does. I had a chance to buy one. I was real close. I actually brokered a deal for one to the guy that I bought Jesse's old rabbit from. And it was grand. It was $2,000.
They're worth
so much money now. And they'd be so dope to have. Zach DePiro says, quote, VW has lost its roots as far as I'm concerned. Not surprised one bit. Let's be real, though. All the people complaining and how they got burned weren't buying a new car regardless, especially with it being an EV. The majority of newer Volkswagens I see are painted in some sort of gray scale. They don't even make a lot of colored ones. Sad, but true.
I think, he's definitely right. But I just, what I don't like most
shame
about
on Volkswagen.
That, it's such bad taste because they don't, whoever wrote that or made up that or came up with that, some agency who has no idea the history of Volkswagen, like, is basically just shitting all over the previous Harlequin concept. Like, ha ha ha, this is so dumb. We would never do this. Just kidding.
The Harlequin for Volkswagen was never meant to be as legendary or as cult as it was. It was made in the, in the 90s as kind of like a, hey, check out the new Golf, like the Mark III Golf and stuff like that. They did a few things.
Cool,
just
goofy
a little marketing
thing
that they did. They did it with the Polo, too. The Polo, there's a Harlequin Polo.
I did know that.
It's super, super tone deaf.
It's really dumb. Yeah, it's frustrating.
Shame on Volkswagen. And honestly, this whole like April Fool's Day thing on social media can just die. I'm so sick of it.
Yeah.
Like everybody
did all
kinds
of. There's a few of them. Gosh, there was another one too that was like in really bad taste. I forgot what it was. Another
one I liked. There was one I liked very much was Oil Stain Lab acquires Fisker Motors. That one was great because Fisker Motors is in dire straits, dude.
Well,
they've like,
and
they fired people and.
We had a couple people message us like, oh, wow, either Fisker's doing a lot worse or Oil Stain is much bigger than I ever thought. And I just had to reply. I was like, dude, look at the date. They're like, oh, yeah.
Electric vehicles are at the forefront of automated. Well, that's also true. Automotive innovation is offering a greener alternative to blah, blah, blah. However, EVs come with their own set of maintenance challenges, particularly when it comes to tire wear. And I brought this one up because I think it's insane. Heavier by design and capable of delivering instant torque, EVs can wear down tires much faster than their gasoline counterparts. Automotive dealer company CDK Global, whoever they are, published a lengthy study about EVs in late 2023. In it, one correspondent said that, quote, when it comes to EVs, tires are the new oil change. We published a story last August about Rivian's R1T needing new rubber after as few as 6,000 miles.
Are you kidding me?
Not all EV owners deal with such egregious wear, but considering most service shops recommend oil changes every 5,000 miles on gasoline-powered cars, the comparison checks out. It gets worse. If you're looking at Goodyear Electric Drive, they start at $201 a piece. Step up to the electric drive GT tires, $271, meaning it's nearly $1,100 for a set. These would work for a Tesla Model 3. Wow. They don't work on a Rivian, who uses Pirelli Scorpion All-Terrain Plus at $461 a piece.
Oh.
So obviously the R1T is very heavy. We've been through that. We showed you the video right. blasting through a barrier. But even so, a car weighing 5,000 pounds, 4,500 pounds, you're wearing through tires pretty quick. Even if you have to change your tires every 15,000 miles or 20,000 miles, I don't care. There was a long time where I went through wheels and cars so much that I didn't buy a set of tires for like 10 years. But everybody yeah. else that's keeping these things and they're driving them 80,000 miles before they get rid of them are going to be shocked when they have to go through three sets of tires instead of just one set of tires.
That is ridiculous. Wow.
All right. In a recent turn of events that seems almost scripted for the world of luxury automobiles, Bentley CEO Adrian Hallmark delivered a remark that's been buzzing with a mix of humor and disbelief. He attributed a dip in Bentley's 2023 sales to what he described as emotional sensitivity from their affluent clientele. To put it plainly, the suggestion was that the ultra-rich were hesitant to flaunt their wealth by driving their lavish $300,000 Continental GTs for fear of appearing insensitive to economically tough times. And I thought this was funny because now he's at Aston Martin. Yeah. So I don't know if,
okay.
Perhaps most intriguingly, his new role at Aston Martin is going to be fraught with emotional sensitivity as well. I don't know. Yeah. Aston Martin owners, are they a little more don't give a shit or what? I don't know. Oh, did you see there was another article about Aston Martin that I read, and it was they have like a pissed off scale.
What?
So it's like it has to do with buttons. So if they're like testing anything and if anything pisses anyone off, it's out. It's out.
Oh, I like that.
I like that a lot. I get into like different cars and stuff and I'm like, anytime you go, Aston Martin chucks it out the window.
See that? I'm pretty sure the EU is outlawing touchscreens now.
They're
requiring buttons.
I think it's more of a scale of safety. I don't know if it's outlawed as much as it is adding buttons increases your safety scale on the rating that have.
Okay.
So if they that don't have the buttons, the cars,
they can do better.
The car is left safe. New Audi sets up dual zone climate control as a subscription. We've been talking about this for a few years, Jake. Audi, known for its sleek designs and innovative features, has introduced a new subscription scheme. With its latest A3 model, Audi is charging buyers extra fees to access features like adaptive cruise control, CarPlay, Android Auto, automatic high beams, and bafflingly dual climate controls. Paying the fee opens Audi's app store. Everybody's got an app store now, Jake.
That's so terrible.
I was, Jesse, I didn't believe this. I was at Walmart the other day and Jesse goes, hey, do you know when, have you gone to Walmart? Do you shop there? You don't seem like a Walmart guy. You shop at Walmart? You can't use touch to pay at Walmart. There's no touch to pay. There's no click to pay. What's wrong, Jake? Are you okay?
Nothing. I'm good. I'm good.
Did I freeze
your internet? Wasn't good for a minute. Yeah. That's fine. Okay.
So at Walmart, you just like started to like just into a black hole of something. It was very, very, very strange. So you can't use Touch Pay, Apple Pay, nothing at Walmart.
Why?
Because there is a battle between all of these companies with app stores and payment. So if you use Apple Pay, Apple takes a cut of that. There's Apple Pay, Google Pay, Amazon Pay, and there's also, of course, Walmart Pay. So you go through you can't tap to pay or use any of it. They want you to use Walmart Pay. The fast checkout lanes at Walmart are going to be for Walmart Pay only customers. Everybody's fighting. Okay. Everybody's fighting over the app store. It's wild.
There's so much money in it. You basically are becoming a bank.
It's pure margin. Yeah. It's absolutely pure margin.
It's so ridiculous. Yeah. Starbucks makes more money. Sorry. Starbucks makes more money on their like app than they do on any store or anything else because I yelled at Nikki for using this because the app you use to pay and like you get like points and discounts and stuff, but you can only load money on the app in $25 increments.
Oh,
so
it's a
there
scam.
Is always money sitting out in this massive pool that now Starbucks has and makes interest on everyone's cash. It's so ridiculous.
That's I feel so like that's what they do in video games too. Like if you play Call of Duty, you buy COD points, CP, COD points. So you buy like 2,000 COD points. And they have the math figured out with the skins and the weapons that you buy in this game. There's no way you ever have zero COD points. It is impossible to spend them all. So then you've got 300 sitting there and you're like, well, I got 300 sitting here.
Okay,
and
this, should spend on it on something.
This skin, this Navy SEAL guy looks pretty cool. Or, man, I really want to gun people down as Nicki Minaj. Oh, what am I going to do? anyway, I was going to also mention, do you when you get in the car and it's cold, what do you do? Do you wait for the car to warm up? Or are you the person that gets in the car and just goes and just like cranks up the heat all the way to the max?
Oh, no. So like all my cars now have like the thermostat where it's just set at a temperature, right?
So you just leave it
alone. So I just don't ever touch it.
You never touch it, right? Ever.
No.
Never touch it.
No.
And it's dual zone and it's synced, right? You hit the sync button.
You hit the sync button because I don't want them different. 100%.
The car knows when it is warm.
Correct.
I'm going to call 100%. My stupid wife right now. She gets into the car. The first thing she does is grab that knob as if it was like, as if she was trying to crawl out of a black hole.
That doesn't do anything.
Onto the knob. It doesn't do anything. Nothing. It does absolutely nothing. And then, of course, there's like battle.
There is one thing you could do, and that's turn the recirc button on.
Yeah, but in the winter, that just makes things foggy. Typically.
I know. But that's the only thing you could do to potentially make it warm up quicker.
But it's even so, not really going to be doing too much. And also, of course, we have this battle over the sync button where she'll like start. She's sitting over. We just did a road trip. It was 5 hours back from Wisconsin. I swear to God, she moved that knob about 150 times. Plus 1 or 2 degrees. 72, 71, 74.
Just leave it.
I will say micro-adjusting.
I'll fuss with my heated seat.
Placebo.
I will turn my heated seat like up and down, though. That one I will fuss with a little bit. But no, you never have to touch the temperature.
You don't have to touch any of it. Just leave it alone.
Agreed.
And of course, I'll reach over then and I'll hit the sync button and change it back to whatever is normal for a normal human being.
Yes, 100%.
Absolutely hate it. So, Jake, I guess people like that new Macan.
Really?
Even the most ardent electric vehicle skeptic would have to admit it took some guts for Porsche to go all in and make one of its most popular models, the Macan, all electric starting in 2024.
No, it didn't take guts.
No guts.
All it did,
it
had no choice.
It would have taken guts to not do something.
Exactly. They had no choice. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to sell it in the EU. That's why
apparently the gamble is paying off. Quote, we're overwhelmed by orders coming in on the all-electric Macan. Bloom announced at the brand's annual press conference in 2023. Recap in Leipzig. We're confident it's going to be a hit. In just 4 weeks since its debut, Porsche has already received over 10,000 orders. That's not that many. How many Macans did they sell in 2021 or something? Jake, look that up.
Probably a lot. I'm going to find that out.
Not including orders from China, Taiwan, or Japan. China doesn't buy foreign EVs. They buy their own. So they're not going to be selling a ton of them in China anyway.
True. Yeah.
This also shows the substance of the product that we can follow up the success of the Taycan. Okay, the Taycan was not a success. No one bought that thing. Let's not get excited. Obviously, there's a press conference, so it's full of just absolute propaganda.
Actually, they only sold 27,000 Macans in 23.
Really? What about 2022? I want to know kind of like when the new model came out. Like,
well, I mean, there hasn't been a new quote unquote model
for a little while.
It came out in 2014 or whatever.
Maybe people like that thing.
Basically the same.
One of the Porsche's strategy with the new electric Macan is to go more upscale, reflected in its $20,000 price increase compared to the gas model it replaces. It now starts $78,000 for a Macan.
Oh.
This move aligns with Porsche's aim to achieve higher profit margins with its EVs. Dude, I wonder and I don't know that we'll ever have access to this information. What is the difference in profit margin between a combustion car and this EV?
I mean,
right now it might be closer, but as we roll on, because they just had to invent all this new shit, right? They have invent the software for it. But as they start being able to like repurpose technology that they've invented, the potential for margin here is insane.
Yeah.
Porsche remains committed.
It's interesting because the most they ever sold here was 27,000 last year. Before that, it was like 18,000, 19,000 of them.
So 10's
which is odd because all of them, I think, are in Woodbury. I see these things so often. Or
they're everywhere. I don't know how they only sold that many. They are absolutely everywhere. Maybe it's just like where I live. There are probably not a ton of them in the deep south. All right, this is via Mozilla. And I didn't know Mozilla was like a security privacy expert. Like they do like ratings for things and they go through how secure is this thing. It's like Consumer Reports for security. No idea.
Correct. Yeah. It started out with all of the online security stuff because they have a lot of tools with that. But then they branched out further.
Is Firefox any good? You're the guy. Is that the browser you use?
I still prefer Chrome, but you always test on Firefox. It has different developer side stuff that is a little more advanced. So it's
why do we need different browsers in the first place?
Don't get me started on that.
Okay.
It started back in Netscape versus
Netscape. Internet Explorer. Oh God.
No, it was pre-Internet Explorer too.
Opera.
No, Opera came much later. Opera's very very similar to Safari actually. But anyways, we don't have to go into that. Yeah, I can do that some other time.
We can nerd out.
It used to be that you would have to write an HTML page for which browser. I mean, you still kind of have to, and like there are different tweaks and hacks you have to do based on the browser because it renders differently, which is really frustrating from a web.
This is
going to
make you angry. And I texted you a little bit about this because I was so, when I was putting this together last night, I was so stunned, I guess. I was shocked.
Yeah.
Jake, I was shocked. I didn't know they did security stuff in rankings, but whatever. All 25 car brands, Mozilla Research, earned a privacy not included warning label, making cars the official worst category of products for privacy Mozilla has ever reviewed. Ever.
Wow.
Cars are the worst category for privacy ever reviewed by Mozilla. I just want to repeat that. Most car brands, 84%, admit to sharing or selling your personal data. Often without explicit consent. They can share it with service providers, data brokers, and even law enforcement. Despite privacy laws requiring disclosure, the extent of data sharing and the lack of control given to drivers is concerning. Only two car brands, Renault and Dacia, allow drivers the right to delete their personal data, highlighting a lack of control for most drivers. No one else lets you delete your data. None.
Wow.
You can go on Google right now and delete all your data.
No, I know.
They allow you to delete it all. You have control. Yep. Google is a monster, dude.
Yeah,
but you can still delete your data. You can do it on Instagram. You can do it on Facebook.
The right to be forgotten, and it's actually a law now, which is very interesting that it isn't mandated.
None of the car brands have confirmed meeting minimum security standards, leaving personal data vulnerable to breaches and hacks. Some notable points about these rankings include: Tesla got the worst score. Oh, they're all bad. Like all the scores are bad. Yeah. Like they're all terrible. Tesla is the second product ever reviewed to receive all of our privacy dings, with the first being an AI chatbot. Tesla's autopilot powered by AI has been involved in 17 deaths, 763 crashes, leading to multiple government investigations and blah, blah, blah. There's one other thing I want to mention on Tesla later.
Wow.
Nissan ranks near the bottom for collecting exceptionally personal data categories, including all information about your sexual activity. Kia also mentions collecting data about your sex life in their privacy policy. Additionally, six car companies indicate they can collect genetic information or genetic characteristics, making reading car privacy policies quite daunting. Now, obviously, there's not like if you're masturbating in your car, they're not going to know unless you go, I'm masturbating in my car. The point is that they're setting the precedent.
Oh, that they can have that.
They can.
Data.
They can. They can if they want.
But I was going to say, there's like cameras in the Teslas that show your face, right? And they later.
I guess it just depends on what your facial expression is. I mean, if you're pretty stoic about it, maybe maybe no one would notice. Additionally, I mean, if you're getting any roadhead, that's probably something that Nissan really needs to know about you.
Oh my goodness.
Where was I here? I lost my track. Blah, blah, blah. None of the car brands use language meeting Mozilla's privacy standard. Hyundai stands out for stating they will comply with lawful requests, whether formal or informal, from law enforcement. Huh. Hey, informal. Hey, can you let me know what Jake was doing when he crashed his Macan? Hyundai, if you own one? Yeah, sure. No problem. They'll just give him the data.
Wow. Data. That's
this
scary.
Basically states that you don't own the data that's being collected.
Correct.
Right? No. You don't own it. Nope. Almost all of the cars on the list, except Tesla, Renault, and Dacia, have signed on to a consumer protection principles from the U.S. automotive industry. While these principles include data minimization, transparency, and choice, none of the car brands actually adhere to any of the standards.
Wow.
Blah, blah, blah. And I mean, the solution here is there's another one that I didn't leave it in here. Oh, yeah, here it is. Last one. A few of the car companies Mozilla researched take manipulating your consent one step further by making you complicit in getting consent from others, saying it's on you to inform them of your car's privacy policy.
Yes.
Nissan makes you, quote, Nissan, security aficionados that they are, makes you, quote, promise to educate and inform all users and occupants of your vehicle about the services and system features and limitations, the terms of the agreement, including terms concerning data collection of use and privacy, and the Nissan privacy policy. What the
Chris?
Yes, sir.
Let's hop in the car. We got to go run to the auto parts store. We got to grab a bolt. Okay, so hop in my car
Can we go to the hardware store instead?
Yeah. We're just going to the hardware store.
Okay. Yeah. That's great.
Okay. So, yep. So hop in. Oh, hold on. I'm sorry. What? I need to first read you this 30-page consent form about all of my car's privacy rules, and you need to consent to them before we can go anywhere. Okay. And it's my job legally to be the one to tell you, you know, that I'm going to capture all the data of
my car. If you start masturbating on our way to the hardware store, Nissan's going to know.
Nissan will know. They literally are saying it is the owner's job to inform others of these privacy concerns.
There's a very easy solution to this. Don't buy these cars. But it's ubiquitous.
It's ubiquitous.
No, it's not. It's not ubiquitous. Buy a 2004 Jake favorite year car.
You're right.
None of this stuff is there.
It's also more environmentally friendly.
Yeah. It's already been built.
The greenest car is the one. Yeah. That's already been built.
All right. Tell me about another. We talked about one cool thing earlier. Tell me about another cool thing before I lose my mind.
I know. We're very frustrated. Well, yes. Speaking of cooling, CSF cooling has always been at the forefront of quality products.
You know what makes me the most angry? Sorry. You know what makes me the most angry about this? Is that there's nothing you can do about it. All of these regulations and all this stuff is passed by unelected agencies that you have no control. You have no control or oversight over. You don't know what's going on. It's so complex. No one could ever hope to understand any of this privacy stuff.
So
no one.
It is. Interesting. There are aftermarket solutions already because this is becoming an issue where you can install modules.
Wrap your car in tinfoil?
No, the little like OBD modules or whatever that will just kill the internet. Because that's what it is. If the car can't communicate to the internet, it won't transfer any data.
Yeah, but Tesla specifically says, yeah, you can turn this stuff off. You're not going to get any over-the-air updates.
Right.
Your warranty is void. If you try to get rid of any of this stuff, they rug pull you. Your car has no warranty.
Rug pull you? They pull the rug out on you?
Yeah, it's called a rug pull.
They pull the rug out. I don't think it's called a rug pull.
It is called a rug pull.
I've never heard they rug pull you.
Anybody that buys crypto knows what a rug pull is.
Okay.
It's when you get the rug pulled out from under you and you're floating in the air in slow motion going, I guess my Tesla warranty is gone because I didn't want everybody to know about all my deviant activities.
That's right. Yeah. It actually gets rid of the warranty. Okay.
I wonder what kind of... we are entering a very, very strange time with all of this AI and all these privacy concerns. And it's so frustrating when you're surfing around the web or you're on your phone or whatever it is that you're doing. Nobody web surfs anymore. That makes me feel old. You know what's crazy is that I don't go on the...
I'm surfing the web.
How often do you go on the internet?
I will Google things.
You'll Google things maybe, but you're not like going to
a platform or something.
You're on a platform. What is that like? Is that considered like Web 2? Like Web 2 is like platforming? No. And like Web 1 is like web old style websites. And Web 3 is like supposed three. To be. Web 3 is crypto. I don't know, dude. There's so much to keep track of. I'm pretty savvy.
Here's the track problem. Of any of it. Yeah. The technology, and this has always been the case, the technology is always so much further ahead than any regulations or even understanding from those in a position to make regulations that it's incomprehensible.
Everybody's 100,000 years old. How could you, if you walked up to, XYZ politician that just shuffled in his loafers to the stand to talk about something. And we were like, so how do you feel about the Mozilla privacy structure that they use to judge all these cars? Do you feel they don't know anything? They're all ancient.
Yeah.
When they said you need to be 30 X years old to become president, they never thought anybody was going to live to be 100,000 years old.
You're
and
right.
be a decrepit, dust-ridden corpse by the time they were in the Senate, the House, or the presidential thing. If you have dentures, you should not be allowed to serve. If you get dentures, or if you have three or more crowns in your mouth, those are the things that add up to, no, sorry, you're too old. You nope. We should
maybe
just
you just have
dental
very
records.
Bad dental hygiene.
That is a poor choice, and you should be excluded for your poor
okay,
choice
there you go.
For running
I get
for
it.
Office.
I like it.
I just yep, like, I like, what that. Are we doing? These guys are too freaking old. You know what this is going to lead to? This is crazy talk right now, okay? At some okay, point, we're going to go, well, can't we just train an AI model to just run the government? We can use all of human history.
Don't do that.
We can use all of human history. We can look back.
No.
These are the good choices that we made. These are the bad choices that we made. This AI can be trained to read every psychiatry book ever to completely understand all of the needs and wants of the human mind and all the Lazik's needs or whatever that stupid thing is called. It's the wrong guy.
Maslow's
but it starts with an L.
Hierarchy of needs. Yeah,
we can understand the hierarchy of needs. We can just give it all to the AI. We don't need these old dudes.
Like such a great idea. I don't see anything possibly comprehensively anywhere going wrong with having AI rule the government.
We're going to get there. We're going to get there. I promise. All right. Let's move on.
I'm
going to bitch about something else. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say, even besides like politicians making regulations, lawyers, it doesn't matter if you're young or not, lawyers don't have the technical aptitude and understanding to even know what they need to write laws to or how to adhere the laws that are being written, how those apply to the technologies. That's actually a lot of what I do
today.
So
how do we do this?
Is cookie compliance. And so if you read the laws on what needs to be compliant, technically the way to try to implement that is like impossible to do. So it's just there's a disconnect in all of this between technology and the actual regulation or understanding of it.
If you start getting into what's really going on in the world of AI and LLMs and language learning models and what people are trying mm-hmm. to do and how fast things are going, everybody's mm-hmm. seen the Sora thing. They've seen the AI that – have you seen Sora?
Yeah. That's the one where it like makes the videos based on
and
a single
and
prompt.
It's insane. It just looks great. Mm-hmm. Last year – Will Smith was eating
Will
spaghetti.
Smith eating spaghetti.
But that's how far we've come in a year. Okay.
Yeah.
And this isn't like behind the scenes of everything that's going on. People are creating and training AI to do everything.
Oh yeah.
Everything. And none of these people that are in office understand it. None. I bet it's
1%. Most people don't understand it.
And nor should they have to. Nor most people should not be expected to do this because
no, but
because we're making society so complex that you cannot exist in it unless you know this stuff, then we've gone backwards. If you can't exist in society as a human being and operate your life and go about your life and do the things you want to do and improve yourself as a person without like taking a sidebar to learn about how all of this technology works and how language models work, that you have to train your own AI and do language models.
I think it's important, though, for the average person to understand and be maybe a little scared or apprehensive of what this means, right? Because
I showed this stuff to my dad. He's terrified. He had no idea. Now he's like, oh, my God.
I'm just thinking, too, about like careers that are going to become obsolete overnight and like mm-hmm. different just industries that will cease to exist. So, like, I'm just thinking for my son, Rhett, like, what would I encourage him to go into? Nothing from, like, a coding or tech perspective at all. No. All of that will be absolutely, you just tell the AI what you want a program to do and it'll write it. And it'll
you're,
be
you're still going to have programmers and coders, but they're going to be more like.
No, you'll have code
it's
review.
It's going to be more like
you'll have
directed.
Someone doing QA.
Yeah, directed coding, QA teams are going to be really important. You're going to have directed coding or whatever. I just, yeah, it's wild. Call centers are like completely getting rid of everybody, increasing their margin by like 80%. This is happening. Just wait till doctors and lawyers. You're lucky. Your wife's been a doctor for a very long time. I don't know that I would want to be a practicing physician. Why would you go to specialties,
though, where it's needed? Like psychology? Do you think psychology could be taken over by AI?
100%. A psychologist AI could know everything that's ever been known about psychiatry. Everything. They could encapsulate and digest every single case that's ever been written or experienced. And
is there nothing subjective about the human ability and understanding to perceive and show empathy and understand nonverbal?
The AI can mimic empathy. It doesn't.
I don't know.
The block to it is you accepting it. It's not the AI's ability to do it, because the AI can do it.
Chris, is the problem. You won't know.
Yeah, will you know? All right.
You won't know.
Tell me about CSF cooling before I have another CSF thing to complain about.
Has always been at the forefront of quality products for a fair price, with a rich history stretching over 7 decades. They provide the best high performance and OEM plus cooling systems on the market today. CSF offers over 3,000 different cooling applications for the most popular makes and models on the road, from classic copper brass radiators for Land Cruisers, Jeeps, and Datsuns, to vintage 80s Mercedes, BMW, Audi, and Porsche platforms, all the way up to new vehicles and electric. Check out their expanding classic series lineup and check them out at csfrace.com or on social. Did you see there that I turned Australian for just a second?
I didn't notice that. I was looking at
you did. The best high-performance OEM cooling systems on the market today. I've been watching too much Bluey.
It's hot there. I just want to touch on this, and I'm going to skip through it. I'm not going to read this whole thing. But Ken Dahl, a careful driver and owner of a software company near Seattle, was surprised when his car insurance cost jumped by 21% in 2002. LexisNexis, a global data broker, provided Mr. Dahl with a 258-page report detailing every trip he and his wife took in their Chevy Bolt over 6 months, including start and end times, distances, driving behaviors like speeding, hard braking, rapid acceleration. The data was collected by GM, the manufacturer of the Chevy Bolt, and used to create a risk score that insurers were able to buy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Remember how scared we were of like communist China's social credit score?
Oh, that's all part of that. Yeah. Well, that social credit score thing has evolved well beyond China now.
You're right. It has. But that's what this is too. Because guess what?
Drivers who have realized they were enrolled in these programs without their knowledge are unhappy. Some who have even decided to sell their cars and switch brands to who? Obviously, 100%. We just went through this other thing to who?
Yeah. Who? I don't know. I want to look at what new vehicles track data.
All right. Tell me about Petrobox. And then I've got one more thing to do, and then we can roll into our Drivers Club only portion.
Ooh, that's right. All right. Petrobox is, of course, a monthly service made specifically for the automotive enthusiasts. Each month, they carefully select items, including tool, detailing supplies, apparel, garage gear, stickers, and publications to be sent right there to your doorstep. It's a curated selection of the latest and greatest gear in the industry. And I used an entire bottle of that Quick Wax detailer spray that we just got. It was amazing. Yeah. Right. Just spraying down the entire car. Because I don't have a garage to park in now, and my driveway's gravel, and it's just a mess. So I'm just, why wash it when you can just spray the whole thing down?
Are you going to?
Absolutely great.
When does your asphalt concrete situation happen?
That depends on when or if I can get an attached garage built here, if I want to do that first, because I need to know where the garage is going to be to go where the actual driveway goes.
Are you going
to
just do a simple barn. Two-car
For the attached, it would be very small, simple two-car. Yes, absolutely. Like,
make
no
sure you
storage
make it,
even.
You can do, you're doing custom a little bit. Make it deeper than you think. Make it, like,
I'm limited
an extra
by
half car. Well, you're not. Not really.
Right here where I want it, I am. But yes.
Well, just make it deeper than you think.
System.
That's all I can say. It's garages are never deep enough.
A septic system and a pool. Mm. It's like a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's where the storage is, hopefully, down in the pole barn, which is also a work in progress. Yes. So Petrobox, awesome, getting this stuff in the mail every single month. It's like Christmas every single month, Chris. There's two different levels to choose from. You get the Petrobox Basic for less than $20 a month, while the Petrobox Premium gives you even more gear for $39.95 a month. Check them out at mypetrobox.com. And be sure to use code OVERCRED, CREST, OVERCRED.
OVERCRED? That's a lot of cred. Over-cred.
We get all the cred here at OVERCRED. OVERCREST. Okay.
Thought we would give a little tease to something that, like, this was going to go on the other side of the Driver's Club break. Okay. But I thought I'd bring it in here so
let's
people
tease
can,
to it?
Let's tease it. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I like it.
Let me share you a picture here.
Share me a picture.
Yeah, let's share a picture to you as I read this. Can you see this?
What? Oh, my God. Is this a real thing?
In sunny Southern California, the Murrieta Police Department found themselves in a bit of a blocky situation. They've been snapping Lego heads onto suspect photos on social media. And Lego isn't playing around and asked them to dismantle this practice.
Okay.
This isn't a photo. They're throwing Lego heads over.
Yeah, got I'll it. Explain, yeah, they're photoshopping why. The yeah, heads why. Over.
Why okay. the covered faces? The department wrote March 18th in an Instagram post that featured five people in a lineup. Their faces covered by Lego heads with varying expressions.
I know the expressions are the best part.
I wonder if they match. I wonder if they have like the guy, a bunch and they're just like, oh.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, he's kind of frowning. He's got a smirk. Yeah, I love it.
The post went on to reference a California law that took effect January 1st, limiting departments in sharing mugshots on social media. Since early 2023, Murrieta County's finest have been covering up faces in their social media lineup with everything from Lego heads to emojis, turning their feed into sort of a most wanted gallery, but with a playful twist. The quirky approach went viral after they shared their method, stirring up quite the conversation.
Oh, boy.
So basically what they're doing is the law says that you can't put mugshots online.
Yes, got it.
Why? Isn't that kind of like, remember the most wanted poster that would go outside the saloon and you just like have their face
yeah,
there?
Yeah, also it's the point of a mugshot, I'm pretty sure, is it's public domain. Like you should be able to look up the public record. I'm pretty sure.
Yes, you
sure.
should be able to look up the public record, but you can't.
So, I think you still can if you like know where the records are. Or,
no,
I don't
you
know.
Have to put this, well, you probably can, yeah, but they don't want you being shamed on social media, which I think shame is a wonderful tool.
Yeah,
I think shame is a wonderful tool for society.
You walk them through town naked and you go, ding, 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 shame.
Under the new California law, the law enforcement must delete booking photos from their social feeds within 14 days unless the person is a legal threat to public safety. The law even allows for those detected to request image removal under certain conditions. Murrieta's PD's creative solution was met with a polite bricks cease from Lego, prompting them to look for new ways to build community engagement without using the toys company designs. Here's a question.
Why does Lego a police have a station? Problem?
Well, it's not a good look for Lego if their little heads are all over actual criminals. They don't want any of that. It dilutes their brand.
They have the Lego figurine though with like the striped jailbird outfit, you know, like the police city set. Like it's perfect. I don't know. I would tie it together.
Just
there.
Reverse it. Take the head away and then put the
even better. Even better.
Why does a police department need a community anyway? Why do they need this?
On social media, you mean?
Yeah. Why are tax dollars spent paying someone to do this at the police department?
They don't. I mean, it is good for public outreach for like if they're trying to look for
out basketball cards, I don't know. Like they did with me when I was a kid. Even with the Lego heads rolling out of the picture, the debate continues. Some departments try to circumvent the law by sharing images that aren't technically mugshots. Like suspects in police cars.
I love that. Oh my God. Be like, hey, it's not a mugshot, but here's this bad guy.
Yeah, here I got another shot to share
just
with you.
Sad in the back of the car.
Come on, Riverside. Give me the thing I want. Mm-mm. This is the back of the police car here.
Oh my God, that's amazing. That is amazing.
It's a Lego head in
so
a hoodie.
Good. Yes.
So this is exactly what Lego is upset about. This is almost sounds like the Porsche suing Singer. You heard about that, right?
Oh, yes, I have.
Porsche is suing Singer for diluting their brand.
Well, this isn't the first time they've even sued Singer.
Well, I think.
Remember?
Well, they got a cease and desist, I believe.
Yeah. Singer had their like Safari thing right before the 9/11 Dakar came out.
Yeah.
And then
all of a sudden it just disappeared.
Remember from that? Social media, from internet, everywhere. Gone. Yep. Just pulled gone. From everywhere.
They got a cease and desist.
Which is kind of bizarre.
For sure. Yep. In essence, I mean, while the Murata Police Department might have to Lego of the Lego, the conversation around privacy, transparency, and community engagement is far from overbuilt. It's a complex puzzle that requires fitting together pieces of law, ethics, and PR without stepping on any bricks along the way. All right. That's it for today, guys. We're going to hang out a little bit, and we're going to talk to our driver's club a little bit more. I've got a couple things that we can chat about, and we can chat about some project stuff. I want to talk about like welding a little bit. I got like a little thing here that we're going to talk about.
Skijoring.
We're going to talk about skijoring. If you want to know what that is, come hang out. Driver's Club is overcrestproductions.com/driver's club. It's $5. If you're not paying, you're a deadbeat. You're a freeloader. That's it. We will see the rest. Yeah. We'll see you guys next week. And we'll see the Driver's Club on the other side.
Take care.